Hey, welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché. This is episode 190 for Friday, January 20th of 2023. A lot has transpired since our last podcast. The Frogs have played for a national championship. Garrett Riley has left for Clemson. Kendall Briles becomes a Frog. Cats and dogs living together. It's mass hysteria. There's a lot to talk about on this particular podcast. And joining us is TCU Hall of Famer Shannon Brazil. How are you doing, Shannon?
I'm good. I'm very good. I'm excited for this show. I know we have a lot to cover, but, man, it's still good to be a Frog no matter what anybody says. I am blessed, and I feel honored to be a Frog. With everything that has transpired, purple will always reign, baby.
Yeah, I have a good question for you a little bit later on that kind of ties into that. Also joining us, we've got the boss, Ryan Zeller. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, good to be with y'all.
Yeah, you know, Ryan and I made the trip out to L.A. And Ryan, how was, game aside, we can get into the game later, but how was your experience in L.A.?
You know, it was good. It was good. I was, you know, we were all at the Fiesta Bowl as well. I have to say the Fiesta Bowl, they just
much
do a
better
much
experience
better
from my perspective, but yeah, go ahead.
Oh gosh, hands down, just wonderful. So LA, the weather was good until the day of the game. So, you know, that part was good. The pep rally was extraordinary. I mean, just the thousands and thousands and thousands of fans was just really, really cool. And then the TCU Alumni Frog Club put on a welcome dinner, that happy hour, I guess, that Friday night with everybody getting in town. That was a part of the package, and that was amazing. I think it was at LA Live. We were there, and it was really, really good. But as far as, you know, our experience as being part of the media, that was just a cluster. Just all the how spread out all the events were, because you'd have one in down on the pier, you'd have one in downtown LA, you'd have, then you'd go to the stadium, and then you know, Beverly Hills and Hollywood. And it was, there's just a lot of Uber drives, you know? So and the hotel that we stayed in, it was the team hotel. It was ridiculous. And it was a beautiful hotel, and the staff, they were very, very nice, but for whatever reason, they have the lobby on the 70th floor, basically, because it's so high. It's the second highest building, I think, it is the highest building west of the Mississippi. And you had to have a key card to get anywhere. And you'd have to go to other elevators to get, you know, to catch another elevator to your room. And then it had stacks of elevators in the same elevator vault or whatever.
Wow.
You call it.
Sounds like the Sears Tower. I'm sorry, Willis Tower.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And so, like, if we wanted to go to someone else's floor to take, you know, so we wanted to paint our hair purple, you couldn't do that. Like, you had to go, everybody had to meet in the lobby. Then you had to bring them back up to your room to get them. It was just, I don't know why it was so complicated, but we were all just fit to be tied. I remember running into one player on the elevator. He looked like he was about to cry. He was like, I just want to get to my room. We were like, okay, go out this elevator, take 11. He was just so frustrated. So we understood. But I will say, that being said, we're all in the lobby every evening, which was like just this big, gigantic living room. And the players were out signing autographs and talking. Their families were there. And of course, that's one thing about TCU that is just so special and I hope never changes, is that you're just right there with the coaches, player, and parents during these games. So
yeah,
it was, I mean, you cannot say, even after everything that's gone on, the game was what it was, and we'll touch on that in a minute. But when you take a look at what the fans did in Phoenix for the Fiesta Bowl, and you saw how the fans came out for the national championship, you cannot argue anymore that TCU doesn't travel. That you can't have TCU at a big game like this because their fans don't travel well, or they're a small fan base. They're not going to show up. Frog fans, you guys showed up in force. It was awesome to see. I mean, the photos, I didn't make it to the pep rally. We could talk why I didn't make it to the pep rally later. But the photos that I saw that Nathan showed me were amazing. I mean, it was purple as far as the eye could see. I mean, you guys absolutely took over that area of town. And then just to see it.
It was a gigantic class reunion, Sean. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You, I have to interject that in that everybody there, I'm sure everybody there did not go to TCU, but everybody there has been a part of TCU for a very long time. And you were just everywhere you went, you're like, oh my gosh, there's my roommate from college. I saw, you know, one of my roommates from college. I saw friends from my hometown that went to TCU. It was just so much fun, really.
Yeah. And I had the same experience online. I mean, I was getting constantly texted and just, you know, hit up on social media from everybody. Mm-hmm. A lot of people I haven't heard from in years that were just like, oh my gosh, you're at the game. That's so amazing. And just everybody seemed to be just kind of coalescing around this one moment. And it was awesome. And Shannon, I know you didn't get a chance to make it out there, but I've just got to ask this, man. You being on that seminal team, late 90s, Sun Bowl, you guys arguably were the team that planted the seed, right? You guys started the germination process that got us to this point. What was it like?
Yeah.
And I know you guys have your own text thread from that team. What was it like for you and your teammates seeing this team get to this level?
Yeah, we do. We have a Sun Bowl group with just about everybody who played and the coaches, smoke coaches. But and in that group, you just, you know, people, we can die now and go to heaven. You know, we've made it. The child we birthed that we had is it's mature with grandkids. Like, it's all different kind of emotions. But to see it, it was almost not real, you know, to be honest with you. It's one of those situations where you just couldn't fathom and couldn't believe it. But you know, those are the thoughts every year that we played. And then after the fact of just what the presence that we set in that locker room, we felt could happen at this university. We felt that this university could be something. It could be big. And so for us, and then see the classes that, you know, the I think we've only missed maybe two bowl games since then. And before our time, we, you know, it was years before TCU's ever been to a bowl game. So
decades.
And then for Coach Patterson to come on, when he did speak about it, you know, he did say, he said a lot of things, but the one thing that stuck out to me, he's like, you know, really, I'm proud of everybody, but I'm most proud of the guys who were there the first 10 years, you know, and that starts with us. And so because we laid the foundation and to see this thing go to a level that you thought could happen, but, you know, Big 12 championship, probably the biggest thing. And then hopefully make the playoffs, but yet go to be a Michigan and then go to a national all in the same year. Mm-hmm. Come on, man. Who would have thought? So that was, it took, you know, for me, man, it's a win. It's a win. It's a victory. I don't care what you say about the game. TCU won because we know in sports, even the haters, and we heard it all, right? Good news. I mean, bad news is the best publicity. At the end of the day, those teams, those people who were hating on us and being there, they should be there, da-da-da, their team was at home. And the only two teams that were playing that night were two teams, us and Georgia. And the world was watching. Who, you know, on the scoreboard, we lost, yeah, but did we lose? Did we lose as a whole, as a university? Because I'm telling you one thing we did, to Ron's point, we adopted so many. I had so many people that were even Baylor fans or OU fans, we're going for you guys. We're rooting for you. Bring it home. And I don't think I would ever say that about Baylor. I promise you, I don't think I would ever say that about Baylor. Or Oklahoma. I just don't like them that much. You would never hear me say that. But people, we adopted so many fans around the country, and that was beautiful to see. You know, that alone. So I'm just like, listen, I get it. We're 1-1 in the playoffs, and we adopted a lot of fans. And I'm telling you, the base, the RTC base has grown tremendously. To your point, Sean, the fan thing has been squashed to me a long time ago. You go back to the Rose Bowl when half purple hat was red. At that point, you can tell. I don't care about that whole. That was squashed that day. We have a photo. You can go to Google and look it up. Half red,
awesome,
half
photo.
Purple. Bad photo, man. It's awesome. And that time, so I knew from that point on we would show up. The bigger the game, the bigger the crowd we'd have. So we squashed that bullcrap a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. It was something to see, and it reminded me very much of the Rose Bowl shot, that aerial shot that you were talking about of the Rose Bowl Stadium back in 2010. That when we walked in the SoFi that day, it was electric. I mean, the TCU fans in the pregame, Ryan, I don't know how it was from where you were sitting, but where I was sitting, which was a little bit closer to the Georgia fans, the TCU fans were actually louder. a lot of times in the beginning of the, of that game. And man, it was electric. It was really, really great to see. And to your point, Shannon, man, yeah, you could look at the scoreboard and you could point to a lot of the different things. You know, what did we do wrong? What's going on? Is there a talent gap? There's a lot of different things you can look at it. But as I was after the game, as I'm sitting in the press box, and we have a couple of our writers on staff who are student writers. They're fantastic writers, but they really don't know TCU prior to this kind of run in the Big 12. They don't know what all, you know, TCU fans have had to go with. They don't know the hurt of the 70s, right? And the craziness of the 80s and being left behind in the 90s and walking the wilderness in the 2000s, right? They don't know any of that. And I'm sitting there and I'm sitting with a big old smile on my face and I am drenched. I'm just soaking wet. I'm sitting there with my wife, who's also soaking wet, and we're sitting in the press box enjoying a Randy's donut and a coffee with a giant smile on her face. Now, for those of you who don't know why we're soaking wet, it rained during the game. That wasn't something that you saw, you know, magically on the TV. Like, it actually did rain. And the press box that they put us in, they brought more media than they had seats for the press box. So they shoveled a bunch of us up into the 500 level, up in the nosebleed section as the, quote, auxiliary. And we were so high up that we would be the first ones to know if it rained. And we were. And a couple of guys still can't get their laptops to turn on. It's bad. But I digress. We're sitting in the press box. I've got this giant smile on my face. My wife has this giant smile on my face. And one of the guys is just like, man, I'm so beat down. How can you be smiling? And I'm like, you know, sitting in the stands, Ryan knows this, 1997. Right? Shannon, you were there. That was not a pretty season. Going through everything that we went through in 1997, only to come away with a victory at the very end against SMU, I never, ever thought that we would ever be back into a bowl game, right? I'm thinking, this is as good as it gets. Getting pepper sprayed on the field, beating SMU. Yeah. I'm like, this is as good as it's going to get. And it was fun, and we had a great time. Shout out to the Sheriff's Department with their pepper spray. But
that was awesome.
I never would have thought we would have gotten there, right? But no, Shannon, you guys proved us wrong. You guys gave us hope. You beat USC in a bowl game a year later. It's like, it blew our minds. And from that point on, this school and this team keeps raising the bar, keeps getting to the next level. And yeah, a lot of times we get to that next level and we get beat down. Everybody remembers the Southern Miss game in 2003, right? Everyone remembers, you know, the Fiesta Bowl before the year of the Rose Bowl against Boise State. Remember how pissed off we were that we finally made it and they put us up against Boise State of all teams, right? I mean, we have seen this team on this rise, on this kind of, my wife kind of equated it to the, like the Yodeler game in Price is Right. You know, you know, how it's kind of like keep going up, right? That was kind of like how this is being played out, and we get there. You get there right at the top of the level, and yeah, it's a disappointment as far as how the game turns out, but you begin to look past that, right? Because we've done that. It's like, okay, now we got here. Now the next step is, now we got to get over that next ledge and get up to the top. And as I'm sitting there, I was kind of reminded of the story of the assault to the summit of Mount Everest. I don't know if a lot of people know this story, but Sir Edmund Hillary and his Sherpa, was it Norgay, I think was his name, they weren't the first ones to attempt that from that expedition. They were actually the second team. They were the backup. The first team, when they assaulted it, they got to this sheer cliff just a few dozen feet from the top, and they couldn't make it. They had to turn around and come back home. They got stopped. Hillary and Norgay were the second team to make it that, and then they eventually got up to the top. But I was remembering thinking, it's like, man, how amazing is it to see this team get this far? And now we've busted down the door, and now we just got to do another assault, and we'll make it up to the top at that point in time. And this, you know, these Frogs do it, and they've been doing it, and I have faith that they're going to do it again. And it was a heck of a season to watch. It really was. It was something else. And yeah. I have to, on behalf of all the Frog fans, Shannon, We have to thank you guys, because you guys began this assault to the summit. And if it wasn't for, Patterson's right, if it wasn't for that first decade of players that dedicated themselves to coming to TCU, playing for TCU, buying into what Patterson was doing, and playing their hearts out for TCU, we would never be here. We would be another SMU. Oh, man.
And well, Coach Frangione, right? He really started it. You know, he was your
coach. Let's, you know, people, you got to, and I tell people, really know your history on this thing, because even before that, we call it Sully boys. Sullivan recruited that core. Sullivan recruited, God rest his soul. But we tell people, and I love Fran, that's my guy, don't get me wrong, but the recruitment for that locker room, myself, the Showboats, the LTs, all that, Sullivan did that. Yeah. And then when we went 1-10, obviously, to your point, winning against SMU, knocking them out of a bowl game, but celebrating like crazy because it was awesome. But we beat our rival. If anybody, we beat them. And then when Franchione comes in and gives us hope and kind of restructures the locker room, restructure the thinking of the athlete, the student athlete, then we take off and the rest is history. And then when Franchione leaves our senior year, that group of guys, Schoble, Curtis Fuller, myself, Cedric Jane, we go into Eric Hyman's office and we say, your next coach needs to be Gary Patterson. Gary knows this. There was two people. They interviewed two people, him being one of them. It was a really quick decision. And Eric hired, we knew that Gary could do it. We knew that this defense wins championships. We knew that Gary could at least have that part down. And he thanks us to this day. He knows the story behind that. And so we felt that we had a hand in him getting hired there, because again, they didn't open. It was a quick, it wasn't even from the time Franchione left. It was maybe 2-3 weeks, and Coach Patterson was the man. And so from that standpoint on, we have what we have, but that's really the true history of it as far as who deserves that credit. I take it all the way back to Sullivan, Franchione, and then obviously Coach Patterson built off of that and made it what it is today, and Sonny now has taken us to that level. So the history of the coaches and the players, that's how it goes down. And, you know, we're just thankful. I'm thankful to be a part of it in a small way and left some blood on the field, and along with hundreds and hundreds of other players that's helped this thing get to this level. So, again, it's just a beautiful thing to see. But also that family, as you talked about, Aaron, Ryan, we're like this, man. It's just a family thing. We all feel we feel a piece of this thing. Like the players that come back, we all feel like we all deserve to be a part of this thing. And I appreciate Sonny and the coaching staff and the players for acknowledging us, for everyone, and welcoming us and acting as if we're playing out there with them. And so it's just a beautiful thing to see. And I'm with you, Sean. You ain't seen the last of it. I think we'll get there sooner than later. It won't be another 80 years, said whatever it's been. It won't be that, because right now, I keep saying, we lost the game. We didn't lose in the end, because the recruits and the people that are coming here, that depth, we've tasted it. But now I think we're going to get the pieces to the puzzle. I don't know if it's, you know, we can talk about the coaches and the depth, but from the player standpoint, I feel we're getting the pieces that we need to make a run for years to come, if you will. So, you know, there's some question marks there with coaching staff, the pieces that are coming in. But, hey, as far as players, I'm all about it, and I see where this thing can go.
Yeah, it's – I think Sonny's the right guy at the right time. I think, again, this was one of the things that was always been debated. Like, whenever Patterson would leave, you know, you're one hire away from being, you know, back in obscurity, right? And I think – And we mentioned it here on this podcast. I made my opinion known that I didn't think Sonny was the right guy. And I'm the first one that'll line up and say, hey, I'm ready to eat my words on that. I think he is the right guy. And I think it's just for that reason, because I think he's the kind of guy, you kind of always hear about, you know, the player's coach in the NFL. But I think he's the kind of guy in this particular system of modern day college football that understands the type of player that we need to get here and motivate them and understands how to motivate them in order to play for the team, not necessarily for themselves. And I think we saw a lot of that in the locker room. And I know I saw a lot of it in the locker room, you know, after the Fiesta Bowl, going in that locker room and watching and talking to some of those guys. I mean, they had completely bought in, and we had talked about, you know, like what exactly, something's weird, something's off, something, it's not off, yeah, but like something's different about this team. They're playing different for something. What is, yep, that? And I think that, mm-hmm, was all due to Coach Dykes. I think Dykes really kind of got them bought in on exactly what he wanted to do, very much like Franchione did with you guys right after, mm-hmm, Sullivan left. And I yeah, think that bodes very well for this team in the future, and I do think we'll be back sooner rather than later. And if the recruiting trail and the rumors that are coming in right now as far as who is looking to come to TCU is any indication, this season's definitely going to pay dividends, and we should be able to see those pay off a lot sooner than a lot of people were thinking. And that's what we need. I think to make it that way, I think Georgia kind of showed us that, hey, you know, having the amount of depth and talent that Georgia has is something that, you know, I mean, they probably have 30 guys that could play in the NFL on that team, no, mm-hmm, doubt. But yep, having the depth that Georgia has is something that we need to make that assault to the summit the next time. And I think that Dykes, mm-hmm, and his staff, whatever that staff's going to look like, and when we have more information, we'll talk about the Briles hire, but we don't have all the information yet. I think that staff's going to be placed for success moving, sure, forward, and it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you. And again, I will say the same, and I've admitted, you know, when Sonny was name was brought up, I let the whole SMU stuff and, you know, getting away, rivalry coach, blah, blah, blah. And I was one of those guys on the, not, you know, bandwagon of, I don't think Sonny was the right fit. That's why when it comes to some of the changes we've had, I'm going to now kind of wait until we hear from the higher ups to make an opinion or to just draw out my views on what I think, because who would have thought Sonny would be the guy after a lot of us? I mean, there was a lot. It was more than us, guys. We all know this. We're like, Sonny's not our guy. And it turns out Sonny was absolutely the right guy. And I think we all believe it. I think everybody's really pretty much falling in love with Sonny. How he did this, and then who does this in a year's time? Come on, guys, let's be real with this. 1 year, you just mentioned, Sean, all the stuff we've been through for all the years just to get here, but one guy, is he like the missing piece for the last 20 years where he could come in, do this all in 1 year, take us to a national title game? I mean, come on. Nobody,
Shannon, how can that not be your guy? Let's be honest, in the 90s, we were looking at Franchione the same way, weren't we?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, how does one guy come in and you guys have such a huge change like that, you know, year over year? You know, I mean, yeah, obviously this is at a much different level, but still, I mean, sure, to have that, sure, dramatic of a change from year over year is amazing. And this was one of the things that I mentioned before, but I'll say it again. I mean, this is with players that don't necessarily fit the schemes that we were trying to run. Right. I mean, sure, not to say that those, sure, players couldn't play in that scheme. They obviously did, and they did a really good job. But these aren't necessarily the kind of players that the coaches were wanting necessarily in those positions. And they kind of, you know, made do with what the, you know, what they had on the roster. And our guys rose to that level and did a fantastic job. But imagine if this staff stays together and they have another year or two for recruiting and transfer portal, what sort of team they can put together if they have the same kind of buy-in from the players. So
I want to make this point because I've been reading a lot about, and this is one thing. Listen, there's a lot of good that comes with success, but there's also a lot of, I wouldn't call it bad, but change.
Yeah.
I'll call it change. Guys, year in, year out, the top dog, I don't care if it's the NFL, I don't care if it's baseball, I don't care what it is. Those teams that go to the playoffs or go to the Super Bowl or go to whatever level, if you watch the trend of players leaving, what do? They leave for money. They leave to get paid because they feel like, people feel like, if you can get to this level, we need a piece of that in this locker room. We don't have that piece. You just experienced it. We have that piece. So I'm never going to fault a coach or a player, depending on the situation, but bottom line, for leaving for a better situation, because that's the name of the game. Listen, let's face it. Over the years, we were doing the bringing in, because the pieces that we had didn't work, so we needed them to leave. Now we're, quote unquote, have kind of flipped the page and we're known as a successful program, and now just made a national title game. There's going to be some change from that. And my thing is, if Coach Dykes blesses it, knowing what this business is all about, so be it. Now it's his job that the pressure lies on him to go get the right fix. I'm not saying that's been the case with these new hires, but what I'm saying is, until it's proven negative or positive, it's his job to go find the next best thing. And so I'm not going to be mad at a man for going to, you know, get double money. And at the end of the day, it's about the kids, right? So he's, whoever leaves or comes, they're going to still be blessing kids, to keep teaching kids. But I'd rather teach a kid for $20 million than $5 million. I mean, that's just me, you know, per se. And so I just want to just say that, you know, we're at the position where there's going to be people coming at our coaches. They're going to be, you know, I wish that was the case for every sport, because that means we're at the national level in every sport, and people want to be a part of that, or they want to take from that. It's up to the coach or the coach to decide whether that he or she wants to be a part of us and stay with us because of whatever reasons, or if they want to go better their, quote unquote, in their minds, better their future somewhere else. That's their decision. So if we're going to be at this level, guys, we got to understand there's going to be change. I'm not saying, you know, we're some of the pieces that we bring in are the change. What I'm saying is, the people who leave, they're going to be sought after, change somebody else's university. I hope that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I agree. I mean, when you have a successful program, pieces of that program are going to get picked apart. And we knew that. I mean, we knew going into this game, we knew going into Fiesta, that no matter what happened, you know, the chances of keeping this staff together through the offseason was going to be slim to none.
Right.
We didn't know exactly how quickly that would happen, but it did happen. And yeah, I don't blame Riley for leaving the Clemson. I really don't. I'm not saying that that's the case. And I agree with you. I think you have to give Dykes the benefit of the doubt when it comes to these hires, because it you're right. It is his job. He is the one who needs to make that decision to pick the guy that fits best with not. And here's the other thing, too. I think that's kind of being missed in this. And again, we don't have all the information because this is a brand new, fresh hire at this point. But as somebody who is an employer, what not a lot of people understand is that when you are interviewing somebody for a job, yes, the skill that that person brings in, the experience that person brings in is highly valuable. But how they fit with everybody else on the team is just as valuable, and sometimes even more so. So I understand that not a lot of Frog fans are happy about this, and I'll put myself in that particular category. But again, without a lot of information, I can't make a judgment as far as how I feel about this offensive coordinator hire at this time. But if Dykes believes that Kendall is the right guy, not just to, like you said, teach these kids, young adults, skills that they need to help make them successful at the next level and achieve what the team wants to be able to achieve. And at the same time, has the right things to kind of fit within the dynamic that Dykes is kind of creating, not just in the locker room, but also in the staff room, then I think we kind of owe Dykes, especially after the season, a lot of latitude and the benefit of the doubt when it comes to this, and just kind of wait and see how things go. But I'm with you. I'd like to hear kind of the reasoning behind this particular hire at this time, but, you know, until we have the information.
Yeah, I'd like to interject on that too. I was just, you know, one of our writers, Tyler, wrote a really good piece, and it was kind of based off the conversation and the thread that we have going on our group text with the writers, and we're amicably divided, right? It's funny, like I'm one of two females on the staff, and I'm okay with the hire. And then we have another one who didn't go to TCU, and he's on our staff, and he is just dead set against it. Rightfully so. Both of us, neither of us are wrong, neither of us is right. And when we've had a long discussion of why we feel the way we feel. And I agree with Shannon before we all got online, saying that it will be nice, and it needs to happen sooner than later, that Sonny address the fan base, because it is so divided right now, and that is the last thing we needed to do after a national championship. I'm fine with the hire. I will never call him by his last name, because that last name just makes me want to vomit. But Sonny, this is what I was going to say, is that Sonny, I was just reading this by one of the Star Telegram writers, has known Kendall since he was a teenager. So, and I put this out there on Twitter and under the Killer Frogs that just like what we were just saying, he just led us through a great season of winning against all odds. We didn't have any issues, knock on wood, on or off the field. It's the most loving, team-oriented, selfless group of guys I have seen in a decade, you know? Oh, and so I will trust that he knows what he's doing. I am shocked that they did this. I just feel like, oh my God. I don't think Kendall's gonna screw up. I think he's learned his lesson. I don't blame him for sticking up for his dad. I don't even blame him the whole come to Baylor. This is the one that gets everybody all weird about come to Baylor. There's a lot of white girls there, you know, that like football players, you know? I mean, and I'm like, well, it's not like, that is kind of weird, but whatever. I mean, whatever. Maybe those boys wanted to date a white girl. Like, is that bad? I don't know. Like, just, is that the worst?
There's the title for the podcast right there.
I know, right? It's not condoning rape. I don't think it's a great thing to lead with, but they're kids, right? And TCU is guilty of saying it's a 4-to-1 ratio, a lot of pretty girls at TCU. So I don't know why.
Man, I was going to say, can't we make that same statement?
I will only say that I went ahead and I put in my application to TCU the day I drove by the beach during the summer. I'm just saying.
Yes, exactly. I mean,
yeah. And if you don't know what the beach is, you didn't go to TCU. So.
Yeah. And here's the other deal. Another thing came up too is like they're pimping the girls out at Baylor. And I was like, no, they're not. Like, the rapes did happen, but that was not because they were pimping out girls. If you want to say that, I said, well, I was a Purple Heart when I was at TCU. And it was just for girls, cute girls. I mean, it was kind of the thing. It's like, get a bunch of cute girls in there. And well, you remember that, Shannon? You had a Purple Heart.
By the way.
Yeah. You're going to say, where is your Purple Heart?
Did you marry her?
My Purple Heart. I didn't marry my. She was. Well, let me be careful. I married my heart. She is a Purple Heart because she attended TCU, but I did have several Purple Hearts that would decorate the locker and leave candy and all those other things. Oh, yeah. And they did an amazing job. Kudos to the Purple Heart.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, you got to be careful, Shannon, because she hears you talking like that. She runs faster than you.
My roommate from the Purple Heart days married the quarterback, you know, of our team, Max Nockey. Oh, wow. And Monica was my roommate. So I mean, people could look at that and be like, oh, TCU's totally pimping out their sorority girls. Well, not everybody was in a sorority, but you know what I mean. And it's like, I wanted to do it and it was fun. And
well, let's at least add a little separation here. What was going on at Baylor was not what we're talking about here at TCU. And a lot of the things that we're talking about here, like, you know, the Purple Hearts and sorority and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think everyone understands those things happen pretty much at every college. That's not something that's not unique necessarily to one college or another. But obviously, the things that happened during Elder Brile's tenure at Baylor, totally different universe. Completely separate from what we're talking about here. And I'm with you, Ryan. He's not his dad, right? And it rubs a lot of people the wrong way that he was associated with a lot of that stuff and he did stick up for his dad. And I'm with you. I get why he stuck up for his dad. Not happy with some of the things that he has said in the past. And to Shannon's point, I'd love to hear Sonny, you know, address it. But Until we get to that point, I'm going to, you know, just kind of reserve judgment on the whole hire. And be like, you know what? Sonny earned it.
Yeah.
Kendall's going to have to earn it too, but we'll see what happens.
I have a lot to say, but I just feel like, you know, I'm sure we'll have another show about this because I want to say so much about the whole situation. Athletes, Baylor, what you spoke about, the girls and the guys. And listen, I get it. And so in our university, it's like, if you play football, there's like, you don't have to do that. Like, it's just there, if you will. Like, you know, there's, you know, like, you don't. So it's just to me, yes, some people knew. Yes, some things, they didn't address it because it didn't have to happen because most likely these guys are football. I don't care what you say, football players everywhere. athletes, whatever, guys, girls, it's just what it is. It's college. But when it's one after another, after another, after another, it's not getting addressed. Somebody knows something. So yeah. I want to dive into that, but I still want to, I want to just wait and hear from Jeremiah and wait to hear from Coach Dykes. And then when they speak, and whether we agree or disagree, I just think it's going to make for, we could probably do a whole show about that. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to stay in neutral zone right now and just see what's said here coming up in the next few months.
I just, yeah. I feel like, I want to say one more thing. I just feel, and somebody made this analogy on Facebook, I think on Horn Frog Fan Nation, I mean, Horn Frog, oh my God, what's it called? I get them all confused now. But anyway, not Fan Nation, Horn Frog.
Somebody
Nation,
said something on the internet that Ryan doesn't like.
But anyway, they made a good point in that he loves the program. He was a student, now an alumni, given monetary means, given his time, everything. He's so dedicated to TCU, and he's not going to let this one decision ruin that, right? I mean, we, our country, and we put it on a bigger scale. I mean, our spouses make bad decisions we don't agree with. We don't divorce them. Our country makes bad decisions we don't agree with. We don't go move to another country and give up our, you know, our whatever American citizenship. And I know that's a not exactly parallel, but it is in a way. It's like, I love TCU. TCU does a lot of great things, and that this one, they've done some questionable things, and eventually it may reach a point where I'm like, I can't take it anymore, but I'm not there yet. And this is one decision. They didn't hire his dad. They hired the son, who has gone on to have several successful positions since then. It's been almost a decade. And while I vehemently disagree with us even going down this path, because it's leading us into these conversations, I'm not going to divorce my school because of it. So,
yeah. Well, Ryan, Sean, myself, and others, listen, at the end of the day, let's just keep this thing 100% real. Those coaches, now that I think about it, I don't think there's a one of that coaching staff, and I could be missing one, but I doubt it. They're not frogs. What I mean by that is they're going to come and go.
Yeah.
You offer them enough money, somebody come and get that whole staff tomorrow if they wanted them. And guess what? A bunch of new coaches will come in. My point being is this. You can't divorce us off the table for me, for you. We can't do that. We can be upset as we want to, but that's our university. That's we went there. We have a part of it. Band, cheerleading, player. We're stuck. And I don't mind being stuck. It's probably the wrong words, but I'm not divorcing anything. I ain't going anywhere. I don't have to like everything that goes on, but we got to realize a lot of these people are fans too. A lot of them, they didn't go to TCU. So I keep them in the fan section. And to me, when it comes to a certain topic, unless you are a frog, a true frog who got a degree from TCU, when it comes to, as we say, in-house stuff, you can't really talk to me about this. I don't want to hear from you. You know, this is in-house, and I want to hear from people who went to TCU, who's really true TCU blood, and we'll go from there. So a lot of that stuff is just noise, and for people talking about we're divorcing, we're doing this, we're doing that, you probably don't get a degree from TCU, so you can talk like that. Yeah.
Well, if Cowboy fans can suffer through first round loss after first round loss after first round loss and not burn all of their gear, Shannon, I'm there with you, man. You know, here's hoping things change against San Francisco on Sunday, yeah?
So. Brother, I was glad with the win last week. I'm cool with that. Yes. No matter what happens this weekend, whatever.
I won the wild card, you're out. You're good.
Yes, I'm good.
Oh, I hope they win against San Francisco. Well, you know, the national championship, being there, being in that stadium, seeing those, you know, seeing the team come out and play, and just the entire season was unbelievable, unreal. None of us, and Nathan had this really good idea, and I wish he was on tonight, but he got stuck at work. But he has a really good idea of going back to the beginning of the season and listening to the podcast that we gave all of our predictions for the season. And man, I was listening to some of that. Man, not only were we way off, which I think a lot of Frog fans were, but man, some of our predictions were just absolutely insane. And when he's on here, I'll do it justice, and we'll go over that again. But man, it was one of those seasons that it really was a storybook year, right? I mean, if you had written this season for Hollywood, I don't think you could have written it any better than what we had outside of maybe that last game. But even then, I mean, somebody pointed to me, it was just like, hey, you know, the guys in Major League lost after that game at the end of the movie, right? Like they won at the end of the movie, but then apparently after that, like the lore is that they lost after that, right? So they didn't actually win
every
the whole
Disney
thing.
Movie ends in tragedy typically, you know, so that was our tragedy, you know, we reached it and then it died.
It happens. Yes. But the season was amazing. The fan base was absolutely amazing, and it was a wild ride. And I'm so fortunate to be able to share that not just with you guys, but everybody else that we were with, the team from 24/7 and Jeremy and those guys, unbelievable. The media team at TCU, Mark Cohen and his staff, have just been fantastic. It was one of those kind of seasons that brought everybody together, and I hope we have another one next year. And it was just fantastic. And I want to thank everybody out there. Obviously, all of you have been listening to us and have been part of Killer Frogs. You guys made it special too. And I know that the last couple of days there's been a lot of, you know, infighting with all the stuff that's been going on. But for the most part, we, like Shannon said, we're stuck with each other, right? We're family. For better or for worse, man, we all bleed purple, and it was a nice way to usher in this new Dykes era, and I hope it's even better as we move forward in the future. I hope this ride continues, and we never get off the carousel, because it's fun. This is fun.
Well, yeah, and back to our picks. It's not that. Our picks were insane. The season was insane. Listen, our picks are fine. You know, we were reasonable.
Yeah.
We were realists. And the season got insane. Like that was
I tell you, I thought John Denton was out on a limb at the State of the Frogdom, and he's like, I think this team will win 9 games. Right.
Well, Landry said Landry said undefeated.
8. I think Landry was. I thought Landry said 8, and I thought Denton
no,
said
no.
No,
Landry was the big one. Like he said 10 or yeah.
10, yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. Hey, seeing Landry after the Fiesta Bowl, man, the smile on his face, I will never forget it. That was something special. And a shout out to John Denton, who retired after so many wonderful years with Brian Estridge. I mean, Frog fans. We'll never ever be able to repay what John Denton and Brian Estridge has brought to the voice of TCU Radio. Is just amazing. So shout out to him. You know, there's one last thing we got to talk about tonight. I promised people I would go over the story after I teased it. So Sunday night. So here's something you guys have to understand. I'm a full-time professor, right? So when we got our media passes to go to the national championship game, the national championship game on Monday the 9th is our first day back on campus, right? So by the time we got our media passes approved, I still had to get my time off for those couple of days approved by my dean. And by the time that process had gotten done, there was no way I was going to get a flight out to LA. So my wife and I decided we were going to drive. And so we piled into my wife's SUV and we drove out and we had a great time. We left Saturday morning. We drove into New Mexico, had a great time, drove into Arizona. We had breakfast in Winslow, Arizona. There was a street corner. There was a flatbed Ford and my wife was the girl and it was awesome. We had a great time. We're taking photos. We're doing the whole Route 66 road trip thing. It's just amazing. Getting to LA is about 1,237 miles, and the car was fantastic for 1,236 miles. Wow. 1 mile from the media hotel, our transmission blows up. And I don't mean like, we had transmission problems. No. It blew up, as in like, there's no more transmission. Now, this happened on the 105, and we thank the good Lord for just protecting us, because we could have easily been just plowed over. But we were able to coax the vehicle off the highway and into a service station, where I get out and I notice there's nothing but transmission fluid, just absolutely plastered to the underside of the car from the engine bay dripping off the tailpipe. I mean, transmission's blown. And so, and there's a little more to that story, but I'm not going to bore you with the details. But of course, I call my insurance company and we get it towed. That's the last time we see the car for 72 hours. The next 72 hours in LA was one that saw fraud, extortion, vehicular theft, abandonment, police reports, and I think a pretty scummy chop shop.
Oh, no.
It was interesting to say the least. Essentially, what ended up happening was instead of the tow truck company taking my car to the Ford dealership like they should have, he takes it back to his lot because he can't figure out the overnight drop-off at the Ford dealership. So he takes it back to his lot and leaves it there and forgets to tell anybody that this needs to go back over to Ford in the next day. So I call Ford the next morning to let them know, hey, this car that magically has appeared on your lot is mine. Here's what's wrong. They tell me they don't know what I'm talking about. There's no vehicle here. Now, if you've ever tried to call a tow truck company, you know the frustrations that I'm about to go through. Needless to say, I do get a hold of them, and they act like they don't know what I'm talking about. What vehicle are you talking about? What Ford Explorer are you talking about? Finally, they explain, oh, okay, yes, no, we do see that. Sorry, we'll get it processed. It'll all be taken care of. Now, this is the day of the game, right? So we have to quickly get my credentials because I couldn't get my credentials the night before because our car blew up. And we're trying to figure everything out. On top of that, the college football playoffs screwed up our parking passes for the media. We were supposed to have two passes, and they only gave us one. And the college football playoff officials were almost impossible to get hold of. So we're running around town trying to, in a rental car at this time, trying to get in touch with people, trying to get everything done. And I'm told my car is at Ford. Game starts. Everyone knows how that went. We get back to our hotel the next night, wake up first thing in the morning. I call Ford. Okay, so this SUV that has magically appeared on your lot, I don't know what you're talking about. There's no SUV here. There's no car here. What are you referring to? Okay.
Gosh.
Try calling the tow truck company. They ghost me. I call my insurance company, who I paid to have towed the car. While I'm on the phone for 2 hours with my insurance company, I'm asked, well, do you know where your car is? And I'm thinking, well, it should be with the tow truck company. And then I remember, quick shout out, Apple AirTags are amazing.
Ooh.
We have one in every one of our cars. So I activate it. Sure enough, it finds our car. It's parallel parked on a residential street in the middle of LA. So I ask my insurance company, I have the tow truck driver's card, and I took pictures of the tow truck company's vehicle and their license number and everything else. The address does not match where my car currently is located, and it appears to be parallel parked on a residential street.
Wow.
My insurance company tells me, call the police.
Oh, gosh.
So, in the process of doing so, my wife and I decide, let's go see where this is at, because this is like 15 minutes from us. So we drive. Sure enough, we find our SUV parked out in front of this beautiful little house in LA that's currently being repainted. And it's down the street from some auto repair shop, whatever. We get out of our car, and I start taking pictures of it. I'm trying to see, maybe, is it unlocked? What's going on? Is there any damage? I'm freaking out here. And a guy from the auto repair shop notices me, crosses the street, and starts watching what I'm doing. Gets on his phone and talks to somebody.
Oh, my God.
The guys in the auto repair, and I'll put auto repair shop in quotes here, and I'll just let you infer what you want to infer at this point. All the guys working in said auto repair shop all stop working and now are congregating in the street.
Wow.
So finally get a hold of somebody at the tow truck company, and they said, well, we're not going to release your car unless you pay $300 in secure storage fees. I'm like, secure storage, as in parallel parked on a residential street in front of a house, secure storage. Really? Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave some details out because this is going a little long. Needless to say, I was able to get another tow truck company to come and get my car. And between official coercion and help with my insurance company, I was able to retrieve the key from the first tow truck company to finally get it over to the Ford dealership. Now, while we are following the new flatbed tow truck to the Ford dealership, we're driving down the highway. Up ahead, half a mile in the right lane, is a stalled car with his hazards on. In the right lane, taking up the right lane. We see it, and we move over. The tow truck driver doesn't see it. Until the absolute, and I mean like, you probably could have fit a piece of paper between the bumpers. The very last, he makes such a sudden move with the truck. We see our SUV begin to tip over and then slam back down onto the tow truck bed.
Like the Griswold.
My wife and I, we just begin to crack up because we're like, of course, after everything that's gone on the last 72 hours, why wouldn't he just wreck the car 5 minutes from the dealership? Makes perfect sense.
Oh my God, you got me. Oh my God.
Dude, so, what a story.
So then, oh my goodness. Did he get there?
So we get there. Uh-huh. We're able to drop it off. And the rest of the night was fine. We were flying out of San Diego the next morning. We made it to the Ford dealership by 9 o'clock. We were able to drop it off. The guys at the Ford dealership were laughing because they knew the whole story. Because I was the one constantly calling them, like, "Hey, this SUV." They're like, "What SUV? What are you talking about? We don't." So for them to finally meet me, they're like, "Hey, it's the guy with the SUV, right?" Like, yeah,
yeah,
here it is. So they had a good laugh, and you know, we were able to drive down to San Diego that night. We stayed down in the Gas Lamp District at the Hard Rock. It was great. We made, you know, those kind of things. It's funny. I keep telling people, I'm like, you know, the game was not the worst thing that happened to me while I was in LA.
Exactly.
Really wasn't. I said, but in all of that, to be honest with you, you know, we saw a lot of good that came out of that particular trip. And my wife and I, we both made the best out of it. You know, like I said, we both feel very blessed and protected because when that transmission blew, quite literally, we could have been pulverized on the highway. Yeah. Because of the situation that actually caused the emergency, that actually caused the problem to the car, which again, I'm not going to get into because it's being litigated with the insurance company. But the whole point is that, yeah, you know, bad things happen, right? But
yeah.
In the end, my wife and I are okay. We're safe. We had a heck of a time. Frogs made it to a national championship game. And I have a story that I will never forget. And I certainly will never forget LA.
Yeah.
It was a heck of a time, but there you go.
Oh gosh, that's a good one. You know what? It's kind of like the whole process was, because right before that, the week before, you know, Southwest Airlines basically shut down, so we're all scrambling to drive to Arizona. It was just kind of a crazy two weeks. Crazy, yeah, it was, and it was fun. It was super exciting and. Yeah. Glad we
Well, I know it's been long, but guys, even I do want to speak on the behalf of the watch party. It was amazing to have all those people in there at the arena. And
so you had media there.
I was at the Showmeyer Arena. Yeah. I took my family, my mother and the girls. We had a good time. It was a lot of people out there, and when they opened up the doors, everybody rushed in to get good seats. And I kind of used my TCU connections. I was in there early, just sitting around, and I got to see them lower the screen. So I'm with the people. I'm like, yeah, well, I have my seats right here, kind of in the middle, and we're all like, okay, a little lower, no, we think that's perfect. And you know, some of the staff who's working there. So we're all just kind of lower. Okay, perfect. I think it's fine for everybody to see the TV because so you don't be looking up and your head's hurting, you know? And so they lowered the screen for everybody. And so we had, now everybody in the house has great seats no matter where you sit. And so it was pretty cool to have some cheerleaders there and some, you know, band members and stuff like that. So it was pretty sweet. And, you know, obviously, you know, when we scored, when we did, the times we did do good, it was crazy. Like, it was like you felt it. And so it was exciting. And I hate that even when the guys were out of it, you know, they were still cheering. And, you know, obviously it was disappointing and people left a little early. I was frustrated. So, you know, I wanted to go get to my TV after a while, you know, so I can see the rest. You know, I'm gonna fight to the end. I'm gonna go with the guys, but I want to be in my own home. You know, I knew kind of where we were going, especially when I saw that we were not gonna be able to turn it around in the third quarter. You know, like we usually do. So anyway, it was good. It was a good time, and a lot of people, not just at that arena, but through downtown Fort Worth and 7th Street, there was so much going on. Everything's packed. Everything's, you know, standing room only.
Did you go to?
I'm telling you, it was a beautiful.
It was amazing.
All pictures, all the social media stuff. It was amazing back home.
Shoot.
That sounds awesome. That sounds absolutely amazing. Well, guys, want to thank everybody out there for listening to us. Again, an amazing season. And again, just thank everybody out there who just is just part of this Frog family, right? I mean, this has been a great ride. Let's keep it going. We've had 190 episodes here. Here's hoping for another 190 more, and here's hoping for a couple of national titles along the way. Guys, you can, of course, go to killerfrogs.com. You can sign up for a free account and let us know what you think about the off-season hires. And, of course, you can find the Killer Frogs on all the major podcast networks. You can find us on Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, now even on Amazon. Yes, we're on Amazon Podcast now. And with that, we've come to the end of the podcast and the end of the football season. We will be taking a couple of weeks off, and we'll come back with some basketball and some off-season hire information a little bit later on. Yes, even Mr. Nick Howard and his velvety smooth voice will be joining us for that. But it's the end of the podcast tonight. Thank you all very much for listening. It's the time we all get our frogs up, and we get to say,
Go Frogs!
Go Frogs!
Go Frogs!